but it was keeping nothing cool save for a lump of yellow butter, and that was full of knives, scarcely fit for eating. On the counter was a fine and wondrous thing, a silver bowl, all brimming full of nutmeg pittums. Round and brown and smooth as river stones, they had come visiting from long-off lands. They filled the air, almost singing of their faraway. Ari eyed them longingly, and ran her fingertips along the edge of their silver bowl. It was etched with twining leaves. But no, rare and lovely as they were, she did not think they would be good for eating. Not now, at any rate. In that way, they were like the butter. Not food, exactly. They were mysteries that wished to bide their time in tree. Ari climbed onto the stone counter so she could reach the apple where it perched up high upon its shelf. Then she sat next to the Chilwell, cross-legged, back straight, and cut the apple into 7 equal pieces before eating it. It was leathery and full of autumn. After that she was still hungry, so she brought down the paper and lay it in front of herself, unfolding it carefully. Then she ate 3 of the figs, taking dainty bites and humming to herself. By the time she finished, her hands weren't shaking anymore. She wrapped the single fig back up and set it on the shelf, then climbed down to the floor. She cupped some water from the well and drank it. She grinned. It gave her belly shivers. After eating, Ari knew it was past time she found the brazen gear its proper place. She tried to flatter it at first. Using both hands, she sat it carefully atop the mantelpiece beside her box of stone. It ignored the compliment and simply sat there, not one bit more forthcoming than it had been before. Sighing, Ari picked it up with both hands and carried it to Umbral, but it wasn't happy in amongst the ancient barrels there. Neither did it want to rest in Cricklet near the stream. She carried it through all of Darkhouse, setting it on every windowsill, but none of them suited it in the least. Arms growing sore from the weight of it, Ari tried to be irritated, but she couldn't stay angry. The gear was unlike anything she had ever seen before in all her years below. Just looking at it made her happy. And heavy as it was a joy to touch. It was a sweet thing, a silent bell that struck out love. All the while she carried it, it sang through her fingers of the secret answers that it held. No, she couldn't be angry. It was doing everything it could. It was her own fault for not knowing where it belonged. Answers were always important, but they were seldom easy. She would simply have to take her time and do things in the proper way. Just to be sure, Ari carried the gear back to where she'd found it. She would be sad to see it go, but sometimes there was nothing else to do. Some things were simply too true to stay. Some merely came to visit for a while. As Ari stepped inside the arching darkness of the Grey 12, Foxen's light stretched up toward the unseen ceiling. His calm green glow reached out between the pipes that tangled on the walls. This was a different place today. That was its nature. Even so, Ari knew that she was welcome here, or, if not welcome, at least indifferently ignored. Ari made her way farther into the room, where the deep black water of the pool lay smooth as glass. Carefully, she set the bright gear upright on the stone edge of the pool. The gap from its broken tooth faced upward at an angle. She took a step back and covered Foxen with one hand. With nothing but the dim gray light from the grate above, the gear was nowhere near as shimmerant as it had been before. She eyed it closely for a breathless moment, head tilted to one side. Then she grinned. It didn't want to leave. That at least was clear. She picked it up and tried it on the narrow ledge above the pool beside her bottles. But it simply sat there, all aloof, coruscant with answers, taunting her. Ari sat cross-legged on the floor and tried to think what other place might fit the brazen gear. Mandrill? Candlebear? She heard a hush of feather in the air. Wings beat hard, then stopped. Looking up, Ari saw the shape of a nightjar outlined against the dull gray circle of light entering the grate high above. The bird struck something hard against the pipe, then ate it. A snail, she guessed. There was no need to guess the type of pipe, though. The ting of it let Ari know it was iron, black and twice the thickness of her thumb. The nightjar tapped the pipe again, then dipped down to the pool to drink. After it drank, the bird winged quickly back to its previous perch, back to the pipe, back to stand in the center of the dim gray light. It tapped a third and final time. Ari's gut went cold. She sat up straight and eyed the bird intently. It stared back at her for a long moment, then flew away, having done what it had come to do. She looked after it numbly, the chill in her gut making a slow knot. She couldn't ask for things to be more clear than that. Her pulse began to hammer at her then, her palms all sudden sweat. She took off running and was gone a dozen steps before she remembered herself and hurried back. Embarrassed at her rudeness, she gave the brazen gear a kiss so that it would know she wasn't leaving it. She would be back. Then she turned and sprinted off. First to Mantle, where she washed her face and hands and feet. She took a handkerchief out of her cedar box and pelted down through Rubric and Downing to Burrow. Breathing hard, she finally stood before the unassuming wooden door that led to Tenants. Her gut all sour and chill with fear, Ari looked around the edges of the door and relaxed to see faint cobweb there. There was still time, perhaps. She pressed her ear against the wood and listened a long moment. Nothing. She slowly pulled it open. Standing anxious in the doorway, Ari peered into the dusty room. She eyed the cobwebs hanging from the ceiling. She eyed the tables strewn with dusty tools. She eyed the shelves packed with bottles, boxes, tin containers. She eyed the other door across the room. There was no hint of light around its edges. Ari did not like it here. It was not the underthing. This was a between place. It was not for her. But as much as she did not like it, the other options were all worse. She eyed the floor, covered with a fine layer of dust except for a set of heavy boot prints, black smudges scuffing through the gray dust on the floor. The boot prints told a story. They entered from the other door, moved from a table to a nearby shelf, then made a line to the doorway where she stood. Ari glared at the spot where they crossed the threshold. As they left the dusty floor of Tenants, the boot prints became invisible. They were from long ago, but even now the sight made her heart thump. Her skin was all hot prickle, indignant at the thought of them. A second set of boot prints told the story in reverse. They returned to Tenants from the underthing. They moved to tables, shelf, and out the other door. They made a circle of sorts, a circuit. They were not new boot prints. Still, they told a story Ari did not love. They told a story she did not want to see repeated. She drew a breath to calm herself. There was no time for this. They would be coming, all hard boots and arrogance, and not one bit of proper knowledge of this place. A cold sweat swept the prickle heat all off her skin. She drew another calming breath and focused. Her expression fierce, Ari took a deep breath and crossed the threshold into Tenants. She placed her small white foot inside the black print of a boot. Her foot was small enough that this was no hard thing. Even so, she moved with slow deliberation. Her second step brought little more than her toes in contact with the floor. Her feet fit easily inside the boot prints, making no marks of their own. Thus she moved, one delicate step at a time. First to a shelf, she eyed containers before picking up a heavy bottle with a ground glass stopper. Next, she took a brush and felt the bristles with her finger. Then she made her way back to the door, her steps as slow and graceful as a fawn's. She closed the door behind her. Then, breathing out a sigh of deep relief, she ran herself to Rubric. Even moving quickly, it took an hour to find the proper place. Rubric's round brick tunnels ran the length and breadth of Underthing, miles and miles of passages, twisting up and down and doubling back, taking the pipes where they needed to go. Just as she was fearing she might never find it, just when she'd begun to fear it might not be in Rubric after all, Ari heard a sound like angry snakes in rain. If not for that, it might have taken her all day to track it down. She followed the noise until she could smell damp upon the air. Finally, turning a corner, she saw water bursting like a fountain from a cracked iron pipe. The spray had wet the bricks for 20 feet in each direction, and the other pipes were dripping with it too. The tiny brass pipes for pressed air didn't mind in the least, and the fat black piss pipe thought the whole thing was rather funny, but the steam pipe was not best pleased. Its thick wrapping was soaked straight through, and it was grumbling and steaming, filling the tunnel with a musty hothouse damp. From where she stood, Ari eyed the dark line of the broken black iron pipe, carefully tracing it through the others. Foxen held high, she walked away from the leak, following the dark pipe backward. After 10 minutes and a quick detour through tenors, Ari found the valve, a small wheel barely big enough for both her hands. Setting down her brush and bottle, she gripped it tight and twisted. Nothing. So she brought the handkerchief out of her pocket, wrapped it round the wheel, and tried again, her teeth bared with the effort. After a long moment, the ungreased edge of it gave way, and it grudgingly let itself be spun. She gathered up her tools and headed back. There was no sound of snakes. The spray had stopped, but the entire tunnel was still sodden. The air hung wet and heavy, making her hair stick and cling to her face. Ari sighed. It was just as Master Mandrag said so many years ago. She walked back where the tunnel floor was dry and sat cross-legged on the bricks among the pipes. Then came the hardest part, the waiting grit at her. She had so much to do. This was important, certainly, but he was coming on the 7th day, and she was nowhere near to ready. She heard something in the distance, some echo of a sound. A scuff? A step? The sound of boots? Ari went startled and still. She closed her hand over Foxen and sat all quiet in the sudden dark, straining to hear. But no, there was nothing. The underthing was host to 1,000 small moving things, water in pipes, wind through billows, the rumbling thrum of wagons filtering through the cobblestones, half-heard voices echoing down the grates. But no boots, not now, not yet. She uncovered Foxen and went to look at the leak again. The air was still hot and thick with wet, so she went back to her sitting place where there was nothing to do but fidget and worry. Ari considered running back to fetch the brazen gear. Then at least she would have company. But no, she had to stay. A leak was bad, but a leak might go unnoticed for some time. Now, with the water to this piece of pipe turned off entire, there was every chance that something vital up above was all alack. No knowing what. The pipe could lead to some disused piece of mains, where it could stay dry for years with no one anyways the wiser. But perhaps it led to the master's hall, and right now one of them was halfway through a bath. What if it led to Crucible, and some experiment left to calmly calcinate was instead undergoing unintended exothermic full cascade? It led to the same thing, upset, folk finding keys, folk opening doors, strangers in her underthing, shining their unseemly lights about, their smoke, the braying of their voices, tromping everywhere with hard, uncaring boots, looking at everything without a single thought of what a look entails, poking things and messing them about without the slightest sense of what was proper. Ari realized her fists were knots of knuckle white. She shook herself and stood. Her hair hung lank around her head. The air was clearer now, not wet and steaming anymore. She gathered up her tools and was glad to see the steam pipe had finally roasted both itself and everything around it dry. Better still, the slow regard of silent things had wafted off the moisture in the air. Ari brought Foxen close to the black iron pipe, and was relieved to see the trouble was no greater than a hair-thin crack. Though the pipe looked dry, she wiped it with her handkerchief. Wiped it again. Then she unstoppered the bottle, dipped her brush, and spread clear liquid all across the tiny break. Wrinkling her nose at the knife-like smell, Ari dipped her brush again, painting all around the pipe. She grinned and eyed the bottle. It was lovely. Tenaculum was tricky stuff, but this was perfect. Not thick like jam, not thin like water. It clung and stuck and spread. It was full of green grass and leaping and... sulfonium? Naphtha? Hardly what she would have used, but you couldn't argue with results. The craft employed was undeniable. Soon she had coated the entire pipe around the crack in glistening liquid. She licked her lips, looked up, then worked her mouth and spat delicately onto the far edge of the wet. The surface of the tenaculum rippled and her grin grew wider. She reached out a finger and was pleased to find it hard and smooth as glass. Oh, yes. Whoever wrought and factored this was living proof that alchemy was art. It showed pure mastery of craft. Ari painted two more coats, laving all the way round the pipe and for a handspan off beside the hairline crack. Twice more she spat to set and glaze it. Then she stoppered up the bottle, kissed it, smiled, and sprinted back to turn the water on. Her duty done, Ari tended to the brush and headed back to Tenants. She pressed her ear against the door, listened. She heard a faint... no, nothing. She held her breath and listened. Nothing. Even so, she opened the door slowly. She looked inside to see there was no light around the other door. For a moment her heart stuttered as she thought she saw new boot prints on... but no, just shadow. Just her own breath-catching fear. Carefully she put the bottle back upon its shelf, setting it inside its own dark, dustless ring where she had found it. And then the brush. She stepped carefully inside the big, black, brutish treadings of the boots. She wasn't one for rucking things about. She stepped the way the water moves within a gentle wave. Never mind the motion, the water stays unchanged. That was the proper way of things. She slowly closed the heavy door behind her. She checked the latch to make herself most certain sure. Stepping back into the underthing, the stones should have been sweet beneath her feet, but they were not. They were mere stones. The air seemed strange and strained. Something was wrong. She stopped and listened at the door again. She listened closer, then opened up the door crack to peer inside. Nothing. She closed the door and checked the latch. She leaned her weight against the door and tried to sigh, but could not find the breath for it inside her chest. Something was wrong. She had forgotten something. Ari ran back to Rubric, heart stuttering as she turned wrong, then wrong again, but then she found the valve again. She went down on her knees to make herself most certain sure she'd turned it open and not closed. She put both hands upon the pipe and felt the tremble of the water running through. Not that, then, but still. Had she moved carefully enough? Had she left a smudge upon the floor? Ari sprinted back to Tenants and put her ear against the door. Nothing. She opened the door and lifted Foxen high so that his light shone down onto the dust. Nothing. By now her skin was all a sheen with sweat. She closed the heavy door. She checked the latch and leaned her slender weight against it, pressing with her hands and forehead. She tried to breathe more deeply, but her heart was stiff and tight inside her chest. There was something wrong about the air. The door refused to sit right in its frame. She pressed against it with both palms. She checked the latch. Foxen's light seemed suddenly too thin. Had she moved carefully enough? No, she knew. She listened, then opened up the door and looked again. Nothing. But simply seeing did not help. She knew that seeming wasn't hardly half of things. Something was wrong. She tried, but she could simply not unclench. She could not catch her breath. The stones beneath her feet were nothing like her stones. She needed to get somewhere safe. Despite the stones, the strangeness in the air, Ari started walking back to Mantle. She took the safest way, but even so her steps were slow, and even so she sometimes had to stop and close her eyes and merely breathe. And even so the breathing hardly helped. How could it when the air itself had gone untrue? The angles were all wrong in Pickering, but she didn't realize how lost she had become until she looked around and found herself in Scapperling. She did not know how she had come to be so out of place, but there was no denying where she was. The damp was all around, the smell of rot, the grit under her feet, the way the walls were leering. She turned and turned again, but could not find her place. She tried to push ahead. She knew that if she walked and turned and walked, eventually she must leave grim, gritty Scapperling behind. She would come out into a friendly place, or at least a place that did not twist and cramp and loom all round her. So she walked and turned and looked around, hoping beyond hope for a glimpse of the familiar, hoping that the stones might slowly start to belong underneath her feet. But no. The hammer of her heart told her to run. She needed her safe place. She needed to get back to Mantle. But where was the way of it? Even if she knew the way, the air was growing tight and dizzy all around her. Though she was loath to touch them, Ari stretched her hand to lean against the sharp unkindness of the wall. Slow steps, a turn. She smiled to see things open up ahead of her. Finally. Her chest began to loosen up when she finally saw the end of Scapperling ahead. She took two steps before she realized what way it offered out. She stopped. No, no, no. The tangle of unwelcome tunnel opened up ahead, but it opened out into the vast and empty quiet of Black Door. Ari did not even turn around. She merely took step after slow and sliding step back the same way she had come. It was hard. The wall caught at her hand and worried it, scraping skin off of her knuckles. The damp, tight knot of Scapperling did not want her back inside, but Black Door did. The wide and welcome path to Black Door stretched before her like a dark, black, open mouth, a maw. A mall. Step after step, she forced her way backward into Scapperling. She did not dare to let the way to Black Door out of sight. She did not dare let it behind her, all unseen, unseemly, all unseemed. Finally, she backed around a corner and sank trembling to the floor. She needed everything to not come all apart around her. She needed to get back to Mantle. She needed her most perfect place. There the stones were safe under her feet. There everything was sweet and proper true. She was dizzy and askant and slant. She shook and could not bring herself to stand. So she folded herself in and sat cross-legged on the floor. She sat there for a long and silent while. She closed her eyes. She closed her mouth. She covered Foxen with her hand. All small she sat, all still. The grubby dank of Scapperling got in her hair, made it hang heavy. She let her tangleness fall all around her in a curtain. It made a tiny space inside. It was a small space just for her. Ari opened up her eyes and looked into this tiny private place. She saw Brave Foxen bravely shining in the shelter of her hands. She uncovered him, and even though his light was thin and thready, the sight of him in this small space made Ari smile. She felt around inside herself for her true perfect name, and though it took a long and lonesome moment, finally she felt it there. It was shivery and scant, scared, skint. But just around the edges, it was still scintillant. It was still hers. It shone. Moving slowly, Ari stood and made her slow way out of Scapperling. The air was thick and shuddersome. The walls were full of spite. The stones begrudged her every step. All everything was snarling all apart. But even so, she found her way to Pickering. The walls were merely sullen there. Then she made her way to Dunning's. Then Ari finally felt the stones of Mantle underneath her feet. She lightly stepped inside her oh most perfect place. She washed her face and hands and feet. It helped. She sat for a long moment in her perfect chair. She enjoyed her perfect leaf. She breathed the lovely, ordinary air. Her skin no longer felt stretched tight. Her heart grew buttery and warm. Foxen was fulsome again, even effulgent. Ari went to Van and brushed her hair until the damp and tangle were all gone. She drew a breath and sighed it out. Her name was sweet inside her chest. All things were in their proper place again. She grinned. Beautiful and Broken. After taking a moment for her leisure, Ari got a drink of water from the pool in moat, then headed back down to gather up the brazen gear. It was patient as three stones, but still, it deserved to find its proper place as much as anyone. For lack of any better ideas, Ari carried it down to Wayne's. Perhaps it belonged there. Or, better yet, perhaps the brazen thing might hint to her of what the tiny hidden wrongness was that kept the sitting room from ringing sweetly as a bell. Or perhaps she might see the gear in a better light down there, especially with the place so new and nearly perfect. It was as good a place as any, she supposed. So down she went to proper, rich, wood-paneled Wayne's, then into her new sitting room. She sat the brazen gear upon the couch and curled up close beside it, tucking her feet underneath herself. It wasn't any more content. Ari sighed and cocked her head at it. Poor thing, to be so lovely and so lost. To be all answerful with all that knowing trapped inside. To be beautiful and broken. Ari nodded and lay her hand gently on the gear's smooth face, consolingly. Perhaps through bottom? Why hadn't she thought of that before? True, when she thought of love and answers, the ancient wreckage in the cavern hardly sprang to mind. But maybe that was just the point. Perhaps some long-dead, hulking Mechanata was in desperate need of 9 bright teeth and love in its abandoned heart. Ari ran one finger down its side, her skin snagging a little on the jagged edge where its 10th tooth was torn away. That's when it struck her like a thunderclap. She knew exactly what was wrong. Of course. She leapt up to her feet, grinning excitedly. She pulled the corner of the carpet up, rolling it until she saw the button laying there, content. Her hands flew to her pockets, looking for... yes. Ari set the tarnished buckle down beside the button. She nudged it closer, turned it. There. She trembled slightly as she put the carpet back in place. She smoothed it flat with both her hands. She came to her feet, and there was a click inside her like a key inside a lock. The room was perfect as a circle now, like a bell, like the moon when it was perfect full. Ari laughed in delight, and every piece of the laughing was a tiny bird come tumbling out to fly around the room. She stood in the center of the room and spun in a circle to see it all, and when her eyes passed over the ring on the table, she saw it no longer belonged here. It was free to go as it pleased. It sang golden all through itself, and the amber it held was gentle as an autumn afternoon. Brimming with joy, Ari danced, her bare feet white against the moss-soft darkness of the carpet. Her heart tumbling happily within her, Ari gathered up the brazen gear again, smiling as her hands closed around it. She was barely halfway back to Mantle when she heard a hint of music. Ari went as motionless as stone, silent as the stillness in a heart. It couldn't be. Not yet. She had days and days. She wasn't nearly... She heard again, faint. A sound that could have been the chime of glass on glass, that might have been a bird, but that might also be the distant singing of a tight-stretched string. He was here, days early, and her half-smudged and empty-handed both. But even so, her heart stepped sideways in her chest at the thought of seeing him again. Ari sprinted back to Mantle faster than a rabbit with a wolf behind. She took the fastest way, even though it went through Faceling with its damp and fear and the horrid smell of hot flowers hanging in the air. Back in Mantle, she set the brass gear up above the fireplace. Then Ari washed her face and hands and feet. She shucked herself and donned her favorite dress. Then, quivering with nervous excitement, she hurried into port and eyed the shelves. Not the bone, of course. Not the book, either. No, not yet. She put two fingers on the crystal, picked it up, turned it over. She breathed, tasting the air. She put it down again. She shifted foot to foot and glanced into Mantle. Her perfect yellow leaf was almost right. The brazen gear was sullen now, and much too proud. He had enough of that. There was her newfound ring of autumn gold. That was fine enough, surely, and it suited him, twice bright. But as a gift, it was foreboding. She did not wish to hint at him of demons. Then she spied the small jar, mouth open. Her eyes flicked over to the other shelf with its scattering of hollyberry, bright as blood upon the cloth. Excitement welled up in her chest. She grinned. She grabbed the berries and funneled them into the tiny bottle. They fit perfectly, of course. They were dutiful and true. Holly bottle, to keep him safe, an early visit, music. It was more makeshift than she liked, barely proper, but truth be told, he was the early one. It was sufficient for an early visit. She darted out the door, her feet tapping all the way through Grimsby, then down oars, then finally up to trip beneath. Ari paused there underneath the heavy drainage grate. Her heart hammered as she tried to listen. Nothing. Had she really heard? Was he waiting? Had she dithered until he had grown bored and left? She put Foxen in his tiny box, then worked the hidden catch and pushed against the heavy iron bars above with trembling arms. The grate swung wide and Ari clambered up to Apple Court, sheltered by the hedges there. She went still, listened. No voices. Good. No light in the windows. Good. The moon was looking into Apple Court. Not a good moon. Ari looked out from the safety of the hedge, peering at the sky. No clouds. She closed her eyes and listened again. Nothing. She took a deep breath and darted through the open grass to stand beneath the sheltering branches of Lady Larbor. There she stopped to breathe, going still as steading. After looking around again, she scampered up the twisty branches. It was tricky with the holly bottle in one hand. She slipped a little, rough bark scritching at the bottoms of her feet. Then she was on top of things. She could see everything and forever. All of Temerant spooled endlessly away beneath her feet. It was so nice she almost didn't care about the moon. She could see the prickly chimbleys of Crucible, and winged mews all full of flicker light. To the east she spied the silver line of the old stone road cutting gully deep into the forest, off to Stonebridge, over the river, and away, away, away. But he wasn't here. There wasn't anything, just warm tar under her feet, and chimbleys, and the sharpness of the moon. Ari clutched the holly bottle in her hand. She looked around and stepped into the shadow of a brick tree chimbley so the moon couldn't watch her. She held her breath and listened. He wasn't here. But maybe if she waited. She looked around. The wind huffed by and swirled her hair all round her face. She brushed it back, frowning. He wasn't here. Of course he wasn't. He wasn't coming till the seventh day. She knew. She knew the way of things. Ari stood there motionless, her hands close to her chest. She held the holly bottle. Her eyes flicked about the moon-swept rooftops. She sat cross-legged on the tin in the shadow of brickery. She looked around. She waited. A quite uncommon pleasant place. Eventually a cloud hid the moon, smug thing, and Ari took the chance to scamper back into the underthing. Her heart was heavy all the way through tenors, but she found a large tangle of dry wood and umbral, washed down the grates in some forgotten storm, ash and elm and hawthorn, so much wood it took 6 trips to carry all of it to mantle. It was quite a find, and by the end of it she was near to whistling. Ari washed her face and hands and feet, smiling at the smell of her yet more slender sliver of sweet soap. She donned her second favorite dress again. It was still a doing day. After filling her pockets and picking up her gather sack, she made her way to Mandrill. She didn't even need to wet her feet, as there hadn't been a heavy rain in ages. At the farthest tail of the twisting way, Ari stopped before the final corner. There was a hint of moonlight up ahead, so she gave Foxen a quick kiss before tucking him inside his tiny wooden box. She took the final piece of mandrel more by memory than sight, stepping carefully until she stood behind the upright runoff grate that looked out onto nothing much except the bottom of a gully. Ari moved to stand next to the heavy bars. From there she saw the bulk of Haven up upon the hill, a shadow looming large against the starry sky. A few lights burned in windows, some red, some yellow, and one up on the topmost floor a bright and chilling blue. She held her breath then. No voices, no hooves, no howling. She looked up and saw the stars, the moon, and a few slender shreds of cloud. She watched the cloud scrap slowly scull across the sky. She waited till it hid the slender moon. Only then did Ari work the hidden latch inside the grate so it swung open like a door. Then she scurried up the gully, across a stretch of well-groomed lawn, and ducked into the shadows underneath a spreading oak. She stood there motionless a while until her heart stopped racing, until she was most certain sure that she had not been seen. Then Ari edged around the tree until the building could no longer see her, and after that she turned and disappeared into the woods. Ari found the place while picking pine cones, a small forgotten graveyard, stones overgrown with ivy. Roses ran wild, climbing the remains of an ancient wrought iron fence. Arms close to her body, hands beneath her chin, Ari stepped into the graveyard. Her tiny feet were silent as she moved among the stones. The moon was out again, but she was lower now and bashful. Ari smiled at her, glad for the company now that she was no longer on top of things and Haven was far gone behind. Here on the edge of the clearing, the moon showed acorns scattered on the ground. Ari spent a few minutes picking up the ones with perfect hats and tucking them into her gather sack. She strolled between the stones, stopping at a broken one, the letters worn away with rain and age. She touched it with 2 fingers and moved on. She lifted up the ivy on a monument, then turned to see the laurel tree that loomed in the far corner of the yard. Its roots were all among the stones, its branches spread above. It was a lonely thing, all odd and out of place. Stepping close, her small feet fitting neatly in between the roots, Ari pressed her hand against the tree's dark trunk. She breathed in deep the warm scent of its leaves. She slowly circled it and spied a dark gap down among the roots. Nodding, Ari reached into her gathersack and brought out the bone that she had found the day before. She bent down and tucked it deep inside the dark and hollow space beneath the tree. She smiled with satisfaction. Standing, she dusted off her knees and stretched. Then she began to pick the small blue laurel fruit and put them in her gathersack as well. She explored the forest after that. She found a mushroom, which she ate. She found a leaf and breathed on it. She looked up at the stars. Later still, Ari crossed a creek she'd never seen before and was surprised to find a tiny farmhouse tucked among the trees. Surprised but pleased, it was a seemly place, all stone with slate upon its pointed roof. On the back porch near the door, there was a small table. A wooden plate covered with an overturned wooden bowl rested there. Beside it was a bowl of clay covered with a glazed clay plate. Ari lifted the wooden bowl and found a piece of fresh brown bread beneath. It held health and heart and hearth, a lovely thing and full of invitation. She put it in her pocket. She knew the other bowl held milk, but the plate that covered it faced up. It was not for her. She left it for the fairies. Keeping in the shadow, Ari made her way around the garden to the barn. There was a strange dog there, all gristle and bay. It massed half again as much as her, its shoulders coming nearly to her chest. It stepped out of the shadows when she came close to the barn. It was black, with a thick neck and scars all across its face. One ear was ragged and chewed from some forgotten fight. It padded closer to her, massive head held low, moving suspiciously from side to side, eyeing her. Ari grinned and held out her hand. The dog snuffled at her, then licked her fingers, before making a great gawp of a yawn and settling down to sleep. The barn was huge, stone below with painted wood above. The doors were closed and fastened with a fat iron padlock lock. But high above, the hayloft was thrown wide to greet the night. Ari climbed the ivy-knotted stone as quickly as a squirrel. She went slower up the second half, the barn boards odd against her fingers and her feet. The barn was full of musk and sleep. Dark, too, save for a few thin bands of moonlight slanting through the wooden walls. Ari opened Foxen's tiny box, and his blue-green light welled out to fill the open space. An old horse nuzzled Ari's neck as she walked by his stall. She smiled at him and took the time to brush his tail and mane. There was a pregnant nanny goat, which bleated out a greeting. Ari scooped some grain into her trough. There was a cat, and they ignored each other. Ari spent some time there, looking over everything. The grindstone, the quern, the small, well-fitted churn, a bearskin stretched upon a rack to cure. It was a quite uncommon, pleasant place. Everything was tended to and loved. Nothing she could see was useless, lost, or wrong. Well, nearly nothing. Even the tightest ship let slip a little water. A single turnip had gone tumbling from its bin to lie abandoned on the floor. Ari put it in her gathersack. There was a large stone sweatbox, too. It was stacked with slabs of ice, each thicker than a cinder brick and twice as long. Inside she found butchered meat and sweet cream butter. There was a lump of suet in a bowl, a sheet of honeycomb upon a tray. The suet was enraged. It was a storm of autumn apples, age, and anger. It wanted nothing more than to be on its way. She tucked it deep inside her bag. Oh, but the honeycomb. It was lovely. Not one bit stolen. The farmer loved the bees and did things in the proper way. It was full of silent bells and drowsy summer afternoon. Ari felt inside her pockets. Her fingers passed over the crystal and the small stone doll. The rock wasn't proper for this place either. She reached inside her gathersack and felt around among the acorns she collected. For a long moment, it seemed like nothing she had brought would make a proper fit. But then her fingers found it, and she knew. Carefully, she brought out the length of fine white tatted lace. She folded it and left it near the churn. It was the careful work of many long and drowsy autumn days. It would find purpose in a place like this. Then Ari took the clean white cloth that had held the holly berry earlier and rubbed it with some butter. Then she broke off a piece of sticky comb the size of her spread hand and wrapped it up as tidy as can be. She would have loved to have some butter, too, as hers was full of knives. There were 11 squared-off pats of it lined up upon the sweatbox shelf, full of clover and birdsong, and, oddly, sullen hints of clay. Even so, they were all lovely. Ari searched her gathersack and looked through all her pockets twice, but in the end she still came up a lack. She closed the sweatbox tight, then up the ladder to the open window of the loft. She put Foxen away, then made her slow way down the side of the barn, gathersack slung tight across her back. On the ground, Ari brushed her floating hair out of her face, then kissed the hulking dog atop his sleeping head. She skipped around the corner of the barn and took a dozen steps before the prickle on her neck told her that she was being watched. She froze mid-step, gone still as stone. Touched by the wind, her hair moved of its own accord, slowly drifting to surround her face as gently as a puff of smoke. Moving nothing but her eyes, Ari saw her. Up on the second floor, in the blackness of an open window, Ari saw a pale face even smaller than her own. A little girl was watching her, eyes wide, a tiny hand against her mouth. What had she seen? Foxen's green light shining through the slats? Ari's tiny shape obscured by hair like thistlepuff, barefoot in the moonlight? Ari's sudden smile was hidden by the curtain of her hair. She did a cartwheel then, her first in ages, her fine hair following, a comet tail. She cast her eyes around and saw a tree, a dark hole in its trunk. Ari danced toward it, twirling and leaping, then bent to look inside the hole. Then, her back to the farmhouse, Ari opened Foxen's box and heard a single tiny gasp thread through the silent night behind her. She pressed one hand against her mouth so that she wouldn't laugh. The hole was perfect, just deep enough so that a little girl could reach inside and feel around. If she were curious, that is, if she were brave enough to stick her arm in nearly to her shoulder. Ari pulled the crystal from her pocket. She kissed it, brave explorer that it was, and lucky, too, it was the perfect thing. This was the perfect place. True, she was no longer in the underthing, but even so, this was so true it could not be denied. She wrapped the crystal in a leaf and lay it in the bottom of the hole. Then she ran into the trees, dancing, leaping, giggling high and wild. She went back to the boneyard, then, and climbed atop a large flat slab. Back straight and smiling, Ari made a proper dinner for herself, of soft brown bread with just a hint of honey. For afters, she had pine nuts fresh picked from their cones, each one a tiny perfect treat. All the while, her heart was brimming. Her grin was brighter than the slender crescent moon. She licked her fingers, too, as if she were some tawdry thing, all wicked and unseemly. Hollow. On the third day, Ari wept. The Angry Dark. When Ari woke on the fourth day, things had changed. She could tell before she stretched awake, before she cracked her eyes into the seamless dark. Foxen was frightened and full of mountains. So today was a tapering day, a burning day. She didn't blame him. She knew what it could be like. Some days simply lay on you like stones. Some were fickle as cats, sliding away when you needed comfort, then coming back later when you didn't want them, jostling at you, stealing your breath. No, she didn't blame Foxen. But for half a minute she wished it was a different sort of day, even though she knew that nothing good could come from wanting at the world, even though she knew it was a wicked thing to do. Even so, burning days were flickersome, too frangible by half. They were not good days for doing. They were good days for staying put and keeping the ground steady underneath your feet. But she only had 3 days left. There was still so much to do. Moving gently in the dark, Ari picked up Foxen from his dish. He fairly smoldered with fear. There would be no persuading him like this, so sullen he was nearly truculent. So she gave him a kiss and returned him to his proper place. Then she made her way out of bed under the tenebrific blanket of the full and heavy dark. It made no difference if her eyes were open, so she left them closed while her hand sought out her cedar box. She left them closed while she brought out matches and a candle. She dragged a match against the floor where it spittered, sparked, then broke. Her heart sank. A bad start for a bad day. The second match hardly sparked at all, just gritted. The third snapped. The fourth flared and faded. The fifth ground itself down into nothing. And that was all of them. Ari sat for a moment in the dark. It had been like this before sometimes. Not for a long time now, but she remembered. She had been sitting like this, empty as eggshell, hollow and chest-heavy in the angry dark, when she'd first heard him playing, back before he'd given her her sweet new perfect name. A piece of sun that never left her. It was a bite of bread, a flower in her heart. Thinking of this made it easier for her to stand. She knew the way to her bed table. The basin had fresh water. She would wash her face and hands, but there was no soap. She'd used the last of it, and all her other cakes were off where they belonged in bakery. She sat down on the floor again beside her bed. She closed her eyes. She almost stayed there, too, all cut string and tangle-haired and lonely as a button. But he was coming. He would be here soon, all sweet and brave and shattered and kind. He would come carrying and clever-fingered and oh so unaware of oh so many things. He was rough against the world, but even so, 3 days. He would come visiting in 3 short days, and for all her work and wander, she hadn't found a proper present for him yet. For all that she was wise about the way of things, she hadn't caught an empty echo of anything that she could bring. No proper gift nor nothing yet to share. It simply wouldn't do. So Ari gathered herself in and climbed up slowly to her feet. There were 3 ways out of Mantle. The hallway was dark, the doorway was dark, the door was dark and closed and empty and nothing. So, without friends or light to guide her, Ari made her slow and careful way out through the hallway, trekking toward tree. She went through Candlebear, her fingers brushing the wall lightly so she could find her way. She took the long way round, as vaults was far too dangerous without a light. Then halfway through Pickering, she stopped and turned around for fear that she would find the Black 12 ahead. The air above as dark and still and chill as the pool below. She could not bear the thought of that today. That meant there was no way for her but damp and moldy scapperling instead. And if that weren't enough, the only proper way through Dunning's was unnecessarily narrow and all athwart with webs. They got in her hair, which made her sticky and cross. But eventually she found her way to tree. The tiny tickling sound of running water in the cold well came to greet her, and it was only then that she remembered how hungry she was. She found her few remaining matches on the shelf and lit her spirit lamp. The sudden brightness of it hurt her eyes, and even after she recovered, the yellow, jumping flame made everything look strange and anxious. She put the 5 remaining matches in her pocket and took a drink of water from the cold well. The shelves looked more empty than usual in the odd, jittery light. She rinsed her hands and face and feet in the icy water. Then she sat down on the floor and ate the turnip in small bites. Then she ate her last remaining fig. Her tiny face was grave. The smell of nutmeg prickled in the air. All flickering and sticky with web, Ari made her way to bakery. It wasn't oveny today. It was hunkered down and sullen, like a forgotten kiln. She passed the mellow pipes and turned again before she made her way to the little bricky niche, so perfect for her hoard of soap to season in. Not hot, but dry, and there was no soap. Her soap was gone. But no, it was the shifting light from the spirit lamp tricking her. All odd and yellow, it threw shadows everywhere. It changed the underthing. It couldn't be trusted. This was obviously a different little bricky niche, empty as anything. She turned around and followed her own footsteps back to Emberling. Then she went back, counting turns, left and right, left, then right. No, this was bakery. This was her niche. But there was nothing there. No burlap sack. No careful cakes of perfect summer soap. Even in the low red radiant of that place, Ari felt ice in her belly. Was someone in her underthing? Was someone moving things around? Rucking up the smoothness of all her long, hard years of work? All watery and loose inside, she searched about, peering around corners and shining her lamp into shadows. Barely 10 feet away, she found her burlap sack torn to tatters. Underneath the scent of her sweet sinus soap was the smell of musk and piss. There was a tuft of fur where some small climbing beast had rubbed itself against a jutting brick. Ari stood, all tangle-haired and sticky. Her tiny face was stunned at first, numb in the flickering yellow. Then her mouth grew furious. Her eyes went hard. Some thing had eaten all her perfect soap. Reaching out, she took the tuft of fur between her fingers. The gesture was so tight with rage, she feared she'd snap and crack the world in two. 8 cakes, an entire winter's worth of soap. Some thing had eaten all the perfect soap she'd made. It dared come here, into the proper place for soap, and eat it all. She stamped her foot. She hoped the greedy thing shit for a week. She hoped it shit its awful self inside out and backward, then fell into a crack and lost its name and died alone and hollow empty in the angry dark. She threw the tuft of fur down on the floor. She tried to run her fingers through her hair, but they snagged up in her tangleness. For a second, her hard eyes went all brimful, but she blinked them back. Hot from bakery, and all a sweat with rage and the unrightness of it all, Ari turned and stormed away, her bare feet slapping angrily against the stone. Heading back to Mantle, Ari took the shorter way. All draggled and smirched, she took a moment to dunk herself in the pool at the bottom of the Silver 12, and felt a little better for it. It was no kind of proper bath, a dip, a rinse, and chilly, but better than nothing, if only just. The moon peered faintly through the grate above, but she was kind and distant, so Ari didn't mind. Getting out of the water, she shook herself and rubbed her damp skin with her hands. She couldn't think of going back to bakery to dry, not today. She eyed the moonlight peering in the grates above and had just begun to squeeze the water from her hair when she heard it. A tiny splashing, a tiny mewling squeak, the sound of distress. She dashed around in a long moment of panic. Sometimes a lost thing found its way down to the bottom of the 12 and fell into the pool while drinking. It took a breathless time to find it. Her damned awful flicker light seemed to shed more shadow than it burned away, and echoes came from everywhere, scattered by the pipes and water in the silver 12. So ears were hardly any help at all.